You're listening to An Act of Courage, a podcast brought to you by Capricare, a global health nonprofit focused on bringing better healthcare services and opportunity to the people of Haiti. My name is Hethel Bauman. I'm your host, and I'm so glad you're here. This is episode number 6 with Dr. Cassandra Esperon. Before we get started, let me tell you a little bit about her. Dr. Cassandra Esperon is a pharmacist that practices HIV prevention. She believes that educating the urban community will decrease the disparities in the HIV pandemic due to institutionalized racism. As a Black woman, she is passionate about decreasing the divide in the Black communities by empowering them to take initiative to lessen the divide and take back control. Cassandra would like pharmacists to prescribe HIV prevention regimens per collaborative agreements to patients to increase access and reduce HIV transmission. She loves advocacy, and her interests peaked for HIV because she remembers watching the Haitian community protest the CDC's false accusations of Haitians being a cardinal cohort that causes HIV. Her self-proclaimed purpose is to add value to all those she comes into contact with on a daily basis. She believes that there is a need to increase access and awareness in the urban communities, particularly Black homosexual men and Black women, for HIV prevention. She currently is practicing pharmacy at the AIDS Healthcare Pharmacy, managing PrEP and HIV patient adherence to treatment. Cassandra is a founding member of SPARK, which is a women's empowerment affinity group of the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. She is also a member of the Haitian Pharmacist Organization and served as the election chairwoman for the most recent election, joining as a board member to the prestigious Little Haiti Rotary Club is another exciting initiative that she had committed to. She has the pleasure of serving her South Florida Haitian community, serving on the Haitian American Coalition Healthcare Task Force that was initiated during the novel COVID-19 pandemic to offer education to help decrease healthcare disparities. Most recently, she has joined the Capricare team as a healthcare committee member. She has the opportunity to assist in ordering the medications for the clinic on the ground from drug companies who offer subsidized pricing for medical missions. She has taken the initiative to start an HIV support group for women in Haiti to help build their self-love. She is also a member of the Haitian American Coalition of South Florida Healthcare Task Force that has come together during the COVID-19 pandemic. I hope you enjoy this conversation. Let's get right into it. Cassandra, thank you so much for taking the time. It's 8 a.m. on a Tuesday morning, and I want to tell everybody that I am not used to getting up this early.
Aw, thank you for coming to me.
No, of course. It's so funny because in my last job, I was getting up at 5 a.m. every single morning to drive 2 hours to get to my hospital account. And this past year, I quit my job last December, so I haven't been waking up that early. I was like, if I don't have to wake up that early, I won't. But for you, I will.
Aw, thank you.
Of course. So I just want to first mention a huge thank you to you for being a member of the healthcare committee at Capricare. Thank you for being with us in that sense. Could you tell us briefly how you got involved with Capricare?
Sure. So pretty much it was LinkedIn connection and JP. Jean-Pierre, he hit me up and then we just started talking and I started getting to know a little bit about his organization. And I think what attracted me to Capricare was the fact that not only was it grassroots, it was actually Haitian led, right? We have like so many NGOs in Haiti and it's American led, right? So I thought that was super cool. And my family's also from Lekai, which is in the south of Haiti. So yeah. The connection was there. So that's what awesome. Drew me to, you know, and I'm already like into doing the community work. So I thought that was like a perfect way of connecting to home.
Amazing. So I want to talk about you, this podcast. I want to spotlight who you are. So tell me a little bit about, you know, growing up in the States as a Haitian American. Where were you born?
So I actually was born in Haiti, in Port-au-Prince. I migrated to the U.S. at the age of one, so very much so Americanized. I've been living in South Florida. So obviously when we come, a lot of times when Haitians come to Florida, we go to Little Haiti first, but then we migrate eventually to like Fort Lauderdale, some more calmer areas. So that's kind of my story. And I'm still here in Fort Lauderdale. And I love Florida. I love travel, but I love coming back home. That's one thing about me.
I love it. I love to travel as well. I want to ask you, when you were growing up, what did you want to be?
So growing up in South Florida, like, I just remember, like, being young and watching, like, my community, like, in terms of immigration, like, they would, like, you know, allow the Cubans to stay and send us back. And I thought I wanted to be an attorney, right? So, like, I didn't understand the concept of advocacy at that point. But to me, that's what lawyers did, right? Like, defended people.
Yep.
So it was to the point where I told my chemistry teacher in high school that I didn't need his class because I was going to law school. But long and behold, I'm a pharmacist now, right? And that's probably the most important class that I ever took in high
school. Yes.
So what I learned from that is just never say never and just always, like, strive to learn. And more specifically, I'm actually in the HIV AIDS field, right? / AIDS field. And that's because I remember, like, the Haitian community of New York around, like, the early, like, 90s, when the CDC falsely claimed the Haitians as one of the four H's, which was not scientifically based, and we were not able to donate blood. And I remember our community standing up to this and protesting it until it got reversed. So that always, like, resonated with me. And in school, it was just like one class of this disease state. And I always said that would be awesome if I could work in this field. But, you know, as you know, it's really hard to specialize just coming out of school. But after working in retail for 5 years, I got the opportunity to work for one of the world's largest NGOs called the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, which is where I'm at now. And I also do things like community education and consulting sometimes, which is, like, you know, everything I do now, I would do for free anyway. Because remember, I'm an advocate / attorney at heart.
I love it. I was just listening to you. And the question I want to ask is, you mentioned the four H's that the CDC came out with falsely. And I want you to explain to our audience what those four H's are for anyone who might not know.
Okay, Harold, this is so timely because, you know, December 1st was just like World AIDS Day, right? And this is a time of remembrance. And we just celebrated the 34th one. So what the four H's were, it was the four cardinal groups where they said that HIV initiated from, right? Higher incidence. So it was homosexual, Haitian, heroin users, hemophiliacs. So with that being said, the Haitian component of it was not scientifically based. As a matter of fact, just in 2020 June, there's a documentary that was posted on Netflix. It was a British documentary saying that we brought it to the side of the Americas, right? So one of our Haitian influencers on Instagram started posting it. And guess what? A petition was drawn. I even called Netflix for that petition. And within 24 hours, it was put down. So not only was this affecting us in the 1990s, 1980s, that stigma still perpetuates today. That stigma probably makes it so difficult for us to go bring our mobile unit to go to, like, an area in our community and for someone to hop on that bus. Because remember, during those times, Hedl, people in our community, people were not hiring them because they thought HIV was contagious. Let's say you had a home, people would not buy a home, maybe not even rent you a home. So I can understand why that stigma perpetuates, which is why one of my advocacy now is to try to, you know, convince the community that, you know, remember, HIV is not AIDS, because If you take your medication, you will not get AIDS. It's not contagious, right? You can only transmit it sexually through blood, right? Mother to child transmission. So this is like such an important conversation, and you'll be surprised as the lack of education. Why? Because it's taboo. Like, we couldn't talk about it. Like, I think my generation is a little bit different, but when we talk about like my parents, my grandparents, like, the whole world, we're looking at the whole country, you know? I can't imagine living in that time. And I remember like growing up, like, oh, you're Haitian, you have HIV. Like, you know, it still perpetuates.
That's so interesting because, you know, when I spoke with JPL in the first episode of this podcast, that's exactly what he mentioned when he was growing up in the States. Like when he first landed in New York and he was going to school, that was what he discovered, the four H's, right when he was in school. He was like, why is everybody discriminating against me? Like, you know, why is everybody thinking that I have HIV? I didn't even know. Or HBO, isn't that a TV channel? Like, what do you mean? You know, how does that make you feel that small children were being harassed at that time?
I think I was a little bit younger during those times, but I always like to, you know, ask people like in JP's age range, like how their experience was.
Yeah.
It was like very interesting because a lot of times they had to hide their identity, right? They like had to recreate their identity. They had to create like groups. Like, I think that's how a gang in South Florida called the Zopound was created. Like, they had to just become strong and like defend themselves. But yeah, it's unfortunate. But for me, I think I'm a little bit younger and I kind of didn't really like experience it as much, but I hear the stories.
Yeah. And I think that through those stories, especially when I hear JPL's story, it's almost like, wow, you had so much courage to basically stand up and say, hey, that's not who I am. But if you want me to go back to Haiti, then sure, I will, but I'm going to make it a better country.
Exactly. Isn't that amazing how you take that energy and redirect it?
I mean, especially at that age, you know, at that age, like, how do you have the maturity to redirect, you know? So I want to talk about your involvement with the Haitian American Pharmacists Association. I'm going to say that again. Haitian American Pharmacists Association. It's a very, I don't know why I got tongue-tied. What's your role with the organization and what are some of the things that the organization does to alleviate the effects of, you know, HIV and AIDS?
Definitely. So right now I serve as a public relations chair. So I'm like one of the board members, and I also chair the education committee. And some of the things that we do is just like education, right? Like we'll do like YouTube videos, like we'll do health fairs, like we're collaborating with the Haitian American Nursing Association. And if you don't know, this organization is like the mother of all organizations in our community. They've been around for like 38 years. Hold down everybody, the lawyers, the pharmacists, the doctors. They're just like amazing. So there's a point where last year, July, they had a mission trip to Cap-Haïtien. This was when the country was in as troubled. They had a mission trip to Cap-Haïtien, and our current president, her name is Dr. Deborah Lolo. She's so awesome. So what the advocacy was, I was trying to convince the Haitian American Nursing Association and the Haitian Pharmacists Association to allow the AIDS Healthcare Foundation to just come in and do the testing for HIV, right? Mm. And there was a little bit of like, maybe not, because the linkage part, because as you know, or if you don't know, HIV medications are super expensive. And when you go on a mission trip and you find out that somebody's diagnosed and you're just going to leave and you don't have access to the meds, right? Because they're very expensive. They're kind of like, maybe we shouldn't do this.
Because it's almost like, what's the point if you know? Right. And you
so
can't.
That goes to show you that this is not happening on the ground, right?
Right.
So our president, who I actually happened to graduate with, so I know her very well, and she's awesome. She helped me advocate and convince them to make them clearly understand, look, they will come in and take care of everything. Guess what, Heddle? we have a clinic based in Port-au-Prince. They actually have a mobile testing program based in the same area that we were in Cap-Haïtien. So that was just like a no-brainer, right? We just had to make the connection. But guess what? It happened. And now it's like, we're not doing anything without each other, right? Like, it's always going to be a collaboration. They found out that some people had syphilis and they got to treat them and continue the treatment because we're leaving, but they're still there on the ground. We found some young girls, unfortunately, who were diagnosed, like young mothers with four kids. Her father, the father of her kids just left her and she found out she was diagnosed. So she got linked into care. You know, it's like one of those things that, oh, maybe it's this. And she's like, oh, no, I don't think it's that. Come to find out, it is HIV diagnosis. So I think that was a huge win. And for me, the eye opener is that in the community, it's not really happening as much as we think it should.
It's so interesting what you mentioned about people saying, oh, no, don't bring it in. Like, don't come in and test because we don't have the... Was it the funds that they were afraid of?
It does. It really does make sense logistically, right? Because it's like, you don't want to open a can of worms that you're not ready to handle. It was a great observation, but you know, we had to make the clarity that this organization had all the resources and everything in place to literally take care of everything. And that was awesome.
Wow. Yeah. So according to the CDC, Haiti has the greatest burden of HIV/AIDS in the Caribbean region. So it says that it's an estimated 150,000 people living with HIV and AIDS, according to the UNAIDS 2016 data. I mean, what do you think this says about the sexual education?
Based on everything we talked about, it's a taboo conversation, right? It's not happening, right? Like, I don't even remember my parents having this conversation with me, to be honest with you, like indirectly in general, but like I would prefer like a direct conversation, like this is what you do, this is a condom, this is how you use it. That doesn't happen in our community, you know? And I'm sure you can relate.
Yes, I can definitely relate. I don't think I've had the conversation even to this day. And I'm 31 years old. I mean, even in schools too, you know, sometimes I feel as if like in Haiti, that's like almost like the least of their concerns in schools.
Right. You know? Definitely the least of their concerns right now. Yeah. And you know, there's also the global stigma component too, right? So it's like, let's not talk about it kind of thing. And then, you know, but Catholic Care is changing that narrative, you know, like I had an opportunity last year to host like a World's Day event where they like brought food and they brought them gifts and it's like an HIV education. So that I was so happy about that. Like that.
How was that received?
It was received well. Like they had a good group of people. I think Catholic Care changes the narrative in general. Like, you know, like I do a lot of like education. Like I did a presentation for, I present all the time for the AIDS Education Training Center topics. And there's one time where I translated into Creole and I did a presentation for like our Haitian providers. So JP had a good idea of, you know, suggesting that I share that with the team on the ground. So we're trying to make it more progressive, right? And to make, you know, this conversation not as taboo, which is super cool. Like in my field of work, I do like prep education and I have a collaborative practice agreement to actually prescribe as a pharmacist with a doctor, which is like something like a MOU type of thing. You sign and it's like legal through the, you know, Florida law, and New York has that too as well. So I'm able to like, you know, talk to people, educate them, and start them on treatment. I wish it could be like that open in our community one day. That'd be so great.
That would be the hope, right?
Definitely.
I want to switch gears and talk about cervical cancer. I know that you're a huge advocate for women's health. And in a previous episode of the podcast, I spoke with Joanne Hepperman, and we spoke about how cervical cancer is the leading cause of death in Haiti in women. What are your thoughts on eradicating this statistic, and how are you working with CapraCare on this issue?
So I think Copper Care's cervical screening program is so amazing because they offer like that see and treat screening to detect cervical cancer and in its precancerous state. And that's important, right? Because it's still treatable. So I think that a way to expand that service would be to like increase the mobile testing program and to do more screenings. Like, I mean, like you got to start somewhere and let's celebrate our wins and then we can slowly expand.
No, exactly. No, you have to start somewhere. In the episode I spoke with Joanne, she was talking about how there was a technology where you wouldn't have to go in invasive or any of that kind of stuff. But at that time, they weren't able to implement that technology and people were just waiting around and not doing anything. And so Joanne was like, why don't we just implement the see and treat method and have CapraCare staff go and, you know, start doing things, you know, and start saving people from having to deal with this. And I think that's the biggest thing. It's like sometimes we want to implement the best technology and the, you know, the easiest thing. It's just, let's just go and start doing things. And then when the time comes, the technology will come and everything will fall into place. I think that's the biggest thing, that when you're working in a low and middle income country, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
Do what you do or what you have.
Yep, exactly. Now, I think that many times people often lose hope when we're working with a country like Haiti they kind of almost haven't catch a break. You know, it's natural disaster after natural disaster, political instability, all of this crazy stuff that's happening one after the other. I mean, what would you say to people who might feel hopeless in terms of supporting CapraCare's continuous efforts?
You start with one person at a time, because once you help that one particular person, that person is going to be empowered to help somebody else. Like for me, in terms of like my advocacy, right? In the beginning, I think I used to focus on like helping the community and educate the community about pre-exposure prophylaxis, which is something you can take to prevent HIV. But guess what, Heddle? I've changed my mind to focus more on the doctors, the healthcare professionals. Why? Because those people can influence hundreds of people. So let's focus on the leadership, right? Let's focus on making sure they have the tools that they need, because that can go far. In supporting CapraCare, that's exactly what you do. And the fact that you can actually support like a specific like committee and like a specific like that resonates, because you can actually know the difference that your resources are making. If you follow like our website and our statistics, we'll let you know what the impact is. So again, as long as most of these people we help, they end up coming back and giving back to CapraCare and working for CapraCare. So you can get discouraged when, you know, things get delayed and maybe like a program has to stop. But once we get back going, you're going to see the impact.
It's a train. It doesn't stop. That's a really good point that you made, because CapraCare does focus on so many different aspects of health, you know, because it's so holistic. Mental health, physical health, disaster relief, et cetera. So if you have for everyone who's listening, if you have a specific topic that you are really passionate about, whether it be mental health or physical health or disaster relief, that's something that you can reach out to us and say, hey, can we help out with that? You know, can I use my money to help with that specific cause? So that's a really good point that you made there, Cassie. Do people call you Cassie?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to call you Cassie, but I don't know.
You're welcome to call me Cassie.
Yeah. So thank you so much for your time here. I wanted to ask you a couple more questions, and these are a little bit more open-ended. So I want you to finish the sentence. Courage is.
courage is. Courage to me is love. Basically, in all its context, it's such an amazing theme because you have like that support and respect, and that just brings the magic, and what it provides, it never fails. So if you just approach everything you do or what you believe in or people or organizations you support with that perspective, I think that's courageous.
I love that. This is the first time I heard courage is love. It's so true. If you love something, you'll go after it. Ugh. No, I really, really love that. Courage is love. For this week, what's one act of courage that you'd like to share with us?
So one act of courage that I would like to share with all the listeners is that when I accept my imperfections and I'm my own best friend, I show myself compassion with understanding and respect, I think that's the most courageous act of all, because that will, like, once you take care of yourself, that's the only way you'll be able to take care of others. And I think that's the most courageous. And I think every day it's a struggle for myself, and I know a lot of people as well.
I feel that wholeheartedly because I'm going through that right now, you know, trying to figure out what it is that lights me up. You know, ever since leaving my job last year, I was like, okay, that was not serving me, and I am going to figure out a way to serve myself so I can serve for others.
And guess what? Once you figure out that balance, which is the struggle, and it's always real.
Yes.
You'll be able to help more people.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I want to ask you one more question, and it's an easy one, I promise. How can people get involved with the work that you're doing? And how can people talk to you and ask you questions?
Well, I think the easiest way would probably be to follow my Instagram handle. It's called The Prep and HIV Pharmacist. And it's also The Prep and HIV Pharmacist at Gmail if you wanted to reach out directly to me. And I also have a CapraCare email, which is cassandra.espra@capracare.org. So please feel free to reach out. I'm very easy to talk to.
I can attest to that. And she's part of the team. So come and join us.
The team at CapraCare is working hard to create an equitable world, starting with our friends in Haiti. So we ask for your support. If you'd like to join us, donate, or learn more about what we do at CapraCare, visit us on the web at www.capracare.org. That's www.capracare.org. Or send us an email at info@capracare.org. Make sure to join our mailing list as well. We can't wait to hear from you. If you love this podcast, please consider subscribing, writing us a review, and sharing it with someone you love. Until next time, let me ask you this. What will your act of courage be today?